that we are having and the department is using is coming from the SAR electronic data interchange EDI, and we are using it in order for us to know which inspections are coming through to the department. We have, in terms of the department, now started the
connection. Do you see that as a constraint in terms of the kind of information that you would ideally need as a partner to be able to get it to know it?
Thank you, Chair. I see there's a constraint, Chair. What we have done is that we have outsourced, like Mr. Radamia has already indicated previously, that we have outsourced the procurement of this system that we want to have within the department, so that we can interface the particular system with the SAR system, so that we have got an integrated system that deals with issues from SAR by the end of the department, so that we are aware of all concerns that come into the country.
Can I take our competition? You have decided to outsource, or you have outsourced this system. It's a software in place, but it is in place or at all. It's not from what I can see, not when are we likely to have it?
Thank you, Chair. The system is not in place. We have got a web breakdown structure that deals with the development of the system, which will start with obviously the planning phase, which the developer has got to do to plot the ideas in terms of what the structure would be. It would cover the whole BDM branch, not only the inspection services, which will take 5 months. The tender is going out from the 1st of September. From there, we expect that next year in March, we would be moving now into the development phase of the particular system. And in terms of the testing, we're looking down the 30th of September 2009 that we will be having that system fully functional, because obviously it touches on a lot of issues, the sort of issues that we need protection and also policy issues.
And Chief, when did the department take a decision to
The decision in terms of purchasing the system was taken this year in terms of last year in terms of going through the system within the department. It was taken in October 2006 that it needs to be procured. What related the issue was that in terms of our options, our MPF budget, there was no money that needed to do. We needed first to procure funds that go on with the system.
What made it
today
the system? October was already a delay in itself, and put into it further delays in terms of implementation of that delay. I think these are the kind of things that they want to hear about but things that should be pretty obvious to go on and on and on and on and on. And it takes quite some time, and in the meantime, for operating highly accessible, actually, but that is the incompetence. The budget and to lay that part for them.
Thank you, Chair. One would hope that this system does speak to other systems and can be synchronized with the other systems that are also involved in the rotation of stuff. And then also the comment made by the director is that that SARS works on 2%, I think it's not really, doesn't take you off the hook. Because everything that comes in with economical value is covered by SARS, but I mean, not everything that comes in falls under agriculture, so it's not really a dangerous. But anyway, Chair, one of the other comments that were made by the AG is that inspectors were not aware of all consignments to be inspected. In other words, inspectors did not have access to integrated information on all regulated agricultural imports per port of entry, and reliance was placed on third parties to inform the Department of Agriculture. And the following examples were given. For instance, at the Port Elizabeth Harbour, it was found that some of the high-risk types of products listed, no inspections had been performed. The inspector that was interviewed regarding this indicated that these consignments had not been inspected due to the fact that the inspectors had not been aware of them. These items, for instance, at the P.E. Harbour were feathers of a kind used for stuffing down, fuel for wood, pig, hog, or boar bristles and hair waste thereof, sparkling wine, unfortified wine. And then cruise ships and passenger ships were not effectively covered by the inspection procedures. And inspectors were not aware of the arrival of these vessels. There was also no structured procedures for the surveillance of them. Then regarding trains, railway cargo and international mail were not effectively covered. Reliance was placed on the South African Post Office to inform the department when there were parcels or whatever. Now the question, DG, what are you doing to improve this situation in terms of the lack of information? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think that part of the answer lies with the system that is being developed. But in the meantime, quite a few things have happened. Firstly, in terms of the cruise ships that are coming into South Africa, the BCOCC has got a committee that deals with the cruise ships that dock in, where there is an intergovernmental approach towards dealing with them. The information is being filtered down to the departments that are involved, and inspections are being done on these cruise ships. In terms of railways, the BCOCC also, which is the Border Control Coordinating Operational Coordinating Committee, also has got a committee that deals with rail, which the department is fully represented at, and there are issues in terms of establishing rail inspection points, because currently there are no rail inspection points. The other issue in terms of the mail center not being covered by docks, we have procured 6 more docks from the USA, and we had a trial run already at O.R. Tambo International Mail Center, and currently there is a dog that is going with the handler that is doing the consignments at the mail center with a very high success currently.
Chair, if I may continue, just on part of your answer regarding the dogs, you say there were 6 new dogs. Apparently these dogs are coming from the USA, and just for information's sake, could one, they're very specialized, could one maybe have an idea what the cost of these dogs are, and are the handlers also going over there to be trained?
Thank you, Ted. We had initially trained dogs, I think the first time was in 1994, 1995, I'm not quite sure. And then we had sent identified personnel across to United States, and we had procured the dogs and they were trained. The second stage that we had just now completed, the USDA had agreed to send the handler here. So immediately there was a great savings in cost in not sending 4 people out there. And now in this last session, we had also trained one of our previous trainers to be a trainer. So we on our way to, in the end, not having involved or not involved any other country, but to do it ourselves, and that will of course will cut down on the cost. A dog, if you want prices on that dog, I would imagine currently a dog would be in the region, a dog itself in the region of 12,000 rand. Of course, the whole exercise is much more money. One must, I think, then also compare that to what is achieved by these teams, and that information is available on what is actually what they got at the airport in the operations.
Okay. Chair, if I may continue, thank you for that. Then another comment made by the AG in this report says that reconciliations were not performed between import permits issued and the inspections that are actually being performed. No reconciliation was done. And at these borders, and one would like to know, what are you doing to improve this reconciliation problem?
Thanks, Chair. I think one aspect that the report failed to highlight is that not all consignments coming to South Africa are imported on the basis of an import permit. there are those that are exempted from permits, and there are those that can be imported on the basis of a permit. But what has been done in terms of this is that the inspection kind of information that we are having now is reconciliatory to the permit. Where a consignment comes in, we have made sure that the capturing thereof includes the bill of entry, includes the phytosanitary certificate or the animal health certificate, plus the import permit. So there is a clear linkage between the import permit plus the consignment notes that came with that particular consignment. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, just one last question before I finish with this. When you travel abroad, whether by plane or ship, or you take a vehicle to go across the border, you often confronted by the methods that other countries are, and the measures they are taking to prevent it. And when you come into South Africa with an aeroplane, they spray something in the alley on the plane, and you're filling a form asking you if you've done something in a farm or bought some product. While as you go to other countries, sometimes you have to, when you get off the plane, you have to walk through a bit of a watery thing. You have to, there's many more, I think, ingenious ways of checking if people are bringing stuff in. And I was just wondering if the department are looking at new methods of seeing if one can take more preventative measures regarding these issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Some of the measures, let's take the one of walking through the stamping one's feet on a damp substance. That's usually when there's an outbreak, particularly FMD, foot and mouth, in the said country when you come in or you leave, and or when they suspect that the country where you come from has got the particular disease. So usually it's applied around those, around given that circumstances. The second one, indeed, the one that has just been discussed around the dogs. The dogs usually sniff material as in plant and as well as animal products. That's the one that we're trying to most strengthen, because the other one is contingent upon an outbreak of a particular disease and there's a particular treatment that's given to that. If you've got avian flu, it's treated differently. You wouldn't walk through. It would be the movement of the animal that are the issue. So various measures, Chair, to brief on this one, are applied. But the one that is more standard and to ensure that there's no filtration, amongst others, is the one of the dogs. And the inspection is taking a percentage. If I could talk to that one just briefly, that SARS takes a sample of 2%, and as my colleague has indicated, in a way we verify, having ensured that the other country has got, that the system has checked it through, so we verify. We are trying to target at something like 5%. Of a sample ourselves. So the measures do differ. But the point is taken that it's got to be boosted up. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think members are aware of the dogs and their effectiveness. Actually, one member said it sniffed his apple coming from Australia. But another one said it missed his biltong. So, we don't know. But anyway, unless if I didn't hear Comrade Pierre well, or I did not get the responses well, in terms of record keeping, the report indicates that the directorate has ineffective and inconsistent procedures that are being used at various ports of entry to document and file inspection related documents. Is that a correct statement? And if so, What is it that has been done to address the situation?
Thanks, Chair.
I think the various ways of capturing, as also alluded by the AG, came from the restructuring process, because the Agricultural Product Inspection Service is an amalgamation of animal health and plant health inspection services that were scattered all over the country into one. So since 2005, those reporting procedures were not harmonized. What we have done since then in terms of record keeping was to firstly make sure that we have got a harmonized system that is being used all over the post that talks the very same language. Over and above that, we have made sure that within the Border Control Operational Coordinating Committee, we have got within the National Border Control Center, which is the intelligence unit of the BOCOC, established an office there where records are being sent on a weekly basis of each and every office on an Excel spreadsheet. And at the end of the month, then we can reconcile whatever is within the NBCC to make sure that it's there. And also, as the recommendation that came up from the AG also, we have made sure that as part of the performance appraisal within the inspection services, each and every inspector has got to make sure that their records are also checked during performance appraisal by their supervisors. Thank you.
So that addresses the inconsistency. That, does that also address the ineffectiveness? I see the harmonization, yes, addresses consistency. But if you also address ineffectiveness?
Yeah, I would acknowledge the fact that to be much more effective, one needs this information system, electronic information. And it's a big issue. We're talking millions of things for that. To deal with these issues on hand systems, and that is what we currently have. We had worked on that as best as we could. We had developed SOP, standard operating procedures. So until that stage that we do have in that electronic system, we convinced that we do what we can do.
I see. So until we have that electronic system, we have to live with the inaccuracies, incompleteness, invalidness, and liability that goes with the manual processing. You see, it goes back to where we started, that this being the challenges that the directorate is facing, the decision to purchase the new system should have been taken much, much, much earlier. Because now, in terms of your own timeline, we're still more than a year down the line before we can have this system. I suppose that does take care of one focus area. Honorable Trent?
Yes. I'm not going to belabor the point that generally the inspection services are probably in a state of chaos. Would you say that chaos is too strong? It is too strong. Okay, well, then I'd like to discuss you some of the facts. Now, let me just begin by saying that you said that you have a challenge, and you accept that, and that you're building. So it's a process. But when you look at performing this service, surely staff are very important. The number of staff that you have available. You can have all the best systems in the world and the best policy. You don't have people, warm bodies there to implement, and people with skills that are trained simply not going to work. Great. Would you agree with me there? Now, this is what the Auditor General said. Despite the high vacancy rate, no action plan had been put in place to facilitate the filling of long outstanding vacancies. No succession plan or staff retention plan had been implemented, and there was a high turnover rate for inspectors in remote areas. A low percentage of consignments were inspected. There was insufficient coverage at the airports and the harbours, and consignments were not inspected in good time. Now, this is, to me, all to do with staff vacancies. Now, let us begin at the top. according to the report, in fact, this falls under the branch Biosecurity and Disease Management, correct? That's your branch, and that is headed up by a Deputy Director General, correct? Now, according to the Auditor General, at the time that this report was done, that post was vacant. Is that correct? Is that post still vacant? Not. So you have now filled that post. For how many months or years was the post vacant prior to that?
Thank you, Chair. The branch was created in 2005, and the branch was immediately filled.
So that post was filled in 2005?
If I could explain, what had happened is that, as I had said earlier on, we had split a very large branch in the department and into program production, resource and resource management, and then biosecurity and disaster management. When that split occurred, immediately the branch was filled. What was not filled was the other branch, namely the production and resource management.
Okay, because according to this agenda, it says biosecurity and disaster management, that post, that is Deputy Director General, it says vacant.
It was immediately filled.
Was, well then, okay, we know that. Secondly, and I'm not going to go through all of the details because Honourable Schaber spoke of the high rate of vacancies, which are a fact. Can you perhaps tell us why you have this high rate of vacancies? Just generally, and we'll get into more detail later, but just generally, why do you have such high rate of vacancies?
Thanks, Chair. The general issue is that infection part is a specialized area which needs subjects like entomology, animal health, which are hard to come by. And on top of it, I think when the audit was being done, we were also, in terms of the job evaluation system, still waiting for the articulation of the results of that particular process. And what has happened in the meantime is that since the Auditor General did the report, our vacancy rate is standing at 10%. But what also strikes is that being a specialized post, you are having such a lot of rotation within the directorate itself, where people now, because of that specialized nature, can move from one post to the other. So instead of just filling posts, you also have got a challenge in terms of the rotation of those posts. But it's a highly specialized kind of area. Thank you, Chair.
You say you have a 10% vacancy. That is, of course, in terms of your authorized posts or your okay. Now, we were told that, in fact, you've got plans to increase.
Can we check 10% vacancy rate? How are these vacancies spread, or maybe the employment? We'll talk about the vacancies because there are more employed people.
Yeah.
I mean, you have your land, borders, you have your seaports, you have your airports. How is the spread among the three areas of operation? If you have it anywhere nearby.
The spread in terms of that, the directorate maybe for the members kind of articulation is that the directorate has got 305 posts. The 305 posts are spread within three distinct areas. That's domestic control, you have got your import, and you have got your exports. In terms of our deliberation that we are having here, I can say that 109 within the port environment are working within the port environment, with a spread within seaports which is having a smaller component within those. The land borders are currently having, I just have got to get my figures right, I think are having 68 people coming through, and you have got your airports
having on 36, and you have got the sequence having the letter part of it.
Just give the thing. What is the letter part? I'm writing down.
For this kind of thing. I brought the total kind of equity that we are having. So if the figures are needed, I can just forward them.
Okay. But I just see that in the briefing notes from the Auditor General, your airport sub complement was actually 42. So if you say 36, it's actually a reduction, isn't it?
Like I was saying, Chair, I was just quickly calculating through what I was having. I didn't just prepare the whole aspect in terms of it. I've got my whole directorate plan with me.
Can you? I suppose it's the information that you can send to us after today. All right. Okay, fine.
Yes, Chair. Where I was going is you have around about 54 posts, border posts, land posts, is that correct? Seaports?
Yeah, no, just a minute. He said that with the land ports, they have 68, so your 54 is overtaken already.
No, I'm not talking about posts. I'm talking about sites.
Port of entry.
You cannot talk about posts unless you're looking at the quantum of where we need to have people. So what my question is that you've got the three areas where you have to cover. Land, C and A, right? And if I'm correct, you've had 54 posts, land ports of entry. You have the harbors, they're what, 6, 7, right? And then you have about three international airports where stuff is coming in.
Correct.
Bottom? 9. Okay, now, also, are these ports of entry open 24 hours a day? Or do they close during the night?
Some of them are open and some of them are closed.
Okay, so where they open, you need to work shifts.
Can I try and explain?
I just need to think. You see, what I'm trying to establish is, you tell us you've got only 10% vacancies. The Auditor General actually believes it's higher, 20%. I think, yeah, is that what you quoted? I think so. But the poster that you've got, are they sufficient to cover this whole range of areas where people are coming into the country? It's one thing to have X number of posts, you know, on your organogram, but are those posts sufficient to do the job? That's really what my question is. Taking into account that obviously there'd be shifts to be worked, etc., etc. Now, the ideal situation that you have now, what would you require to have a perfect situation where you could really control the entry of this East Coast property?
Thank you, Chair. Let us take just the 54 land ports. The 54 land ports, currently 22 of those are what they call commercial entry points. That is where SARS will also be. We are currently, I would imagine, at 11 of them. But immediately the system says that we are also, in terms of agricultural legislation, declaring points of entry as agricultural ports or points of entry. So if it's not declared, then there can't be any agricultural goods coming from that, unless there's prior arrangements made to that. To come to the personnel situation, I think it was mentioned, it's not wrong, that currently we've got 54 or 68, I'm not sure, posts on land borders alone. We envisage that we will need in the end 140 in that region, more or less, to then man those ports of entry that we want to have sufficiently covered for agricultural entrance. Now, you take a port of entry like Bike Bridge, to I think touch on the other part of the question. They currently, I think, have something like 18 people or 22, I'm not quite sure. We envisage that we will need 40 people there to really cover all the points of that we must, because there's 5 or 6 within the area, the port area, there's 5 or 6 places where you need to place people. And to then man it, of course, for 24 hours. So currently we're making arrangements with other departments, and in some instances we're not covering all the areas. But no, we need more personnel to that extent, more or less, that that Ramaswamy has also indicated, to address that against budget. Our current budget option on biosecurity for this year, we're asking 100 million rand. That is now the information system has been costed. The preliminary amount is pointing in the direction of 50 million rand that we will need over a period of 3 years to develop that system. And then, of course, there's good worked-out plans as to with regard to the personnel that we will need over the
We've been told that you have difficulty finding appropriate people for these jobs. And on the other hand, you tell us that you need these people in order to provide the service. Now, you mentioned that you have 18 at the ports. Yeah, and you need 42. You said you have 68 at the land ports to entry. You need 140. Now, you know, that means that you are a huge number of people short. Now, how are you going to actually find those people if you can't even fill the current vacancies because of what you told us, that you need people with these skills? Now, you know, it's like we're just saying we can't find them because the economy of our country is at risk here. It's a very, very high priority. You were mentioning that in the United Kingdom, very sophisticated, even there, they have problems. And look at the number of cattle they've had to kill now. I wonder what the quantum of loss to that economy is because of that outbreak. So, I mean, surely this has got to be a very, very high priority, this particular directive. And yet, and the chair made that point that it's almost as if you guys are very relaxed about this thing. You know, it's a process. We're just getting along with it, and, you know, there doesn't seem to be any urgency. And this really, worries me. And then what also worries me is that your department underspent its budget. Is that correct? Didn't spend all your money last year. So therefore, you can't have a problem with money. If you need money, you have money. You underspent your budget. So what are you going to do to correct this? Because it really concerns us. It's not just saying we can't get the people. You must have a plan in place to get them. And what is that plan?
Can I respond to part of it? We had the border control environment, the focus on that by the government came from 2003 when the president in his State of the Nation address has indicated that security, border security in general, also including biosecurity, is an area of focus. That is when the DCOCC that my colleague is referring to has been established, and that is from there on that money has been pumped into infrastructure upgrading that. There's currently, I think, projects running in the extent of over a billion rand to build our infrastructure at these places. But apart from that, we had also then started focusing in this area. And what happened was, yes, there was a vacancy. There was also a lot of posts, again, we indicated from 6 to 52 created. So I acknowledge the fact that there was vacancies running for some time. Currently, there's a 10% vacancy, 50 posts vacant in this area. But what we also had to do then is because you can't spend money if you don't have systems running. And we had built also our systems as far as human resources are concerned. My colleague indicated the issue of post-establishment where people had to now apply for higher posts to move on. But in general, the movement of people around from government and also from government outside is a big percentage of people moving around. Apart from that, we had gone in and we had currently, and my colleague can indicate how far we had gone with that. But what we did was that we had worked on what we called workbench training. That is now the part, and please remember, that people appointed in this position already has a formal qualification, tertiary qualification. So it is not people that haven't got any training. But then you need to train the people in the specific area of expertise, plant and animal. And what we did there was what we called workbench training. That is the training that people will receive when working with other people. We had structured that, and we are very far on the road to get SOCBA accreditation for that part. That's immediate there. We have also released some of the senior personnel, but there's not many of them, but we have released some of them to focus just on training. The modules have been developed, so we believe that if we can get the resources on the money side, that there will be people available to appoint and then to train to take through this training part that we have now several.
All right. So what you need is money. If you have the money, the people will be there. But Eddie says you have the money.
I'm still waiting for the answer. I also didn't understand the budget.
Part of the getting of the people, besides the training, which takes some time, is to really get people literally imported. We had been discussing with the Cuban authorities, in as far as the other side of this discussion, the vets. A colleague of mine is currently in Zambia with the under the SADC summit, and again we're discussing with some countries within the sub-region exactly to quickly patch up this matter, particularly on the side of the animal health, because there is, as you correctly indicated, the plant and the animal. So we're trying to cover these as speedily as possible.
Before I finish with the vacancy, I just want to repeat once again what the Auditor General said. No action plan has been put in place to facilitate the filling of long outstanding vacancies. That's what he said in March, a few months ago.
Do you now have a plan
to fill the vacancies and also to find extra people for the additional posts that you intend to create? Do you have a plan in place? With time frames, or don't you?
We have got a plan, Honourable Member. But the indication, even which is also espoused by the department, which was given as a strategic intent also, was to have less than 5% vacancy rate within all departments. We are on course towards our plan, which said that by the beginning of October, we must have less than 5%.
Let's do this, Chief. I think what we'll request from you, together with the staff establishment that you're going to send to us within the next 2 weeks, just send that plan as well. Then we can have a look at it.
I'm happy with that, Chief. See, then I wanted to go on to the other area, and you have covered it to some extent. And that is skills and experience. An insufficient number of inspectors have the relevant experience to ensure quality control. A number of inspectors indicated that they had received insufficient training or none at all. That's what the Auditor General says. Now, you say you have got a training program in place. I think you also said that if you had more money, you could improve on that. But perhaps you can just comment on that that particular finding that the Auditor General made. Once again, I'm going to remind you that this report was published in March, which is some months back, and can you just give us an idea as to what progress you're making in terms of skills training?
Okay. If with your permission, Chair, just to give a general layout of the situation around the skills environment. Thank you, Chair. We've just received, even from the DPSA at Lekgotla, Cabinet Lekgotla, a broader outlay that is universalizing across the country and across government a shortage of skilled personnel. The report further goes on to say, in terms of experience, across government departments, we're shrinking on that, and the age group is getting younger and younger. And again, that is universally stated within that report. So I just wanted to lay out that, and then they say a group of economists that have been advising cabinet has been saying it seems on the skill shortage we are likely to run for some time with this problem. That being though a general state in which we are operating, then I'll allow my colleagues to indicate what we are now doing to ensure that within that environment we mitigate the negative impacts of that situation.
But is that not what is contained in the plan that you will be sending us? If it's contained in the plan, now let's leave it at that. Let's have the plan.
We could make it be part of that answer, Chair. Thank you.
No, what I was saying was that the answer that I was going to give in terms of measures that are in place to try and respond to what Honorable Trent has said? Is it not part of the plan?
It is part of the plan, because obviously in terms of not having the people with the right kind of attributes you would want to, in terms of a plan in filling vacancies, also plan it out around the five critical areas of our plan, and then it will be submitted to you, like requested we will be with the other.
Yeah, no, I'm saying if it's part of the plan that you submit to us, then let's leave it at that and then move on to other matters.
Just a few more, and then we can move on, and then we can come back. Just one or two more.
A maximum of two.
Two more.
Yeah.
I just want to deal with the issuing of permits.
Okay.
According to the information we were given, you have two offices where permits are issued. That's Pretoria and Stellenbosch. Is that correct?
That is correct, Honourable.
And you have only 2 to 3 people responsible for this function, is that correct?
Honourable Member, that falls within the scope of plant health and animal health. I just have got to verify in terms of the numbers of people who are responsible for issuing permits, but there is a responsible person for issuing permits. Within plant health, I can answer that there are 3 people who are responsible for issuing permits. I'm not too sure in terms of it.
Okay, but do you regard the numbers of people you have as sufficient?
I think permit is just, honourable member, is a result. What goes on before that is what is very critical in terms of doing risk assessment and PRAs. And I think that is the critical area that the DG already touched on in terms of getting capacity there. And that's where I think that most of the capacity is needed.
Okay, so yes, I understand the actual issuing of the permit, that's just an administrative process, yes. But there's a lot of work to be done prior to that, and communication between various role players and the other departments, and that is what concerns us, whether that there is capacity there, but you say you are working on that.
This performance audit was done, and the area is broad. On biosecurity, it mentioned that there's various directives or components involved in this total system, or in the whole system. This was focused specifically on import infections. So there's a lot of other issues, quarantine, there's a lot of other actions actually around this. And this, the pest risk analysis will be something that lies with another division. It's not import inspection as such. The issue of permits also lies there. What he's done in this area might be a FIFO certificate or something. But import permits actually is covered by another component.
Okay. So just one more on the import permits, and after that my last question. Do you keep records of the permits that are refused? And if so, if not, why not?
Yes, I can say yes. Because it's a whole evaluation. If you want to import or you want to import to other countries, it's a whole exercise determining a whole range of risk factors that's attended to. So if that is not being awarded in the end, that permit will be on record.
My final question, and this one concerns me. Honorable Kerber said right up front that there are rumors that cattle are being brought across the border from Zimbabwe through the Kruger Park. Is that what you said, Pierre, I think? Now, what concerns me is that surely the anticipation of a meltdown in Zimbabwe was inevitable. For years now, you should have been anticipating that there was going to be an economic meltdown in Zimbabwe, and that is our northern neighbor. A country where most of the economy is agriculture. Now the meltdown has occurred. Now, did you anticipate that there would be a flood of people coming across the border and perhaps animals and animal products and plants? And if you didn't anticipate, why not? If you did anticipate, what have you done to assist in minimizing the negative effect that this could have on our economy?
honorable friend. The people who are crossing the border from Zimbabwe are not imported goods.
No, Chair, what I'm actually trying to say is if you are responsible and you must anticipate things that are going to go wrong, and you're responsible to make sure that we do not have, well, you've got to minimize the risk of stuff being brought in by people, not the people, can't stop them. I'm saying that we not anticipate that something was going to happen, and therefore try and put in place some sort of a plan to deal with it. Because I believe that, in fact, we should have. And if we didn't, I'd like to know why not.
All right. I'll indulge you here for a point of view. Thank you, Chair. Maybe not so much what the Honourable Member said about the meltdown. Our approach to the situation...
I do know Zimbabwe has been melting down 100 times. So after 6 months, we'll be told there's a meltdown. After 2 years, we'll be told there's a meltdown. So,
Thank you, Chair. We are taking... Our approach has been rather guided by the earlier... comments and discussion within the committee where we were saying the country since 1994 engaged and had borders opening up to it, and trade was increasing, and in terms of movement of people and goods, we then had to anticipate the implications of that within this particular component. From that perspective, Chair, amongst others, particularly with our neighboring countries such as Swaziland, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe, already a system was put in place of saying not only should we have a system internally from our side managing both the fences as well as the movement of animals, but we've gone further to actually liaise directly with the government's consent to assist them from their side. To manage this process. Indeed, on the Swaziland and the Mozambican side, we could say at the rate of the outbreaks, and that system seems to have held very, very well. The Zimbabwean side and the northeast around the Mozambican side in particular, where we've got the game parks, the problem has been up to now been more of the animal breaking through. So both ourselves, the provincial departments, and the countries concerned have been trying to strengthen that bit in terms of the parks. I think it is a recurring problem in as far as the animals are concerned. We have further, this within what my colleagues have been calling the BOCOC, been allowed to actually take on the direction of the fences along the Zimbabwe and the Kruger National Park. It keeps on falling. Now, it's only now that we are getting the indication that human beings might be involved, but up to now, from our perspective, it's been the animals. Okay. But to the question that has been asked, yes, we had anticipated on the basis of the movement of goods and services, and we had put the measures. What we've now done through a different process here was to see whether along the Zimbabwean border we may not need to increase on top of what we have. But that assessment is going to be provided to the minister soon, because that issue has been under discussion as early as 2 days ago.
Right. Yes, I just want to follow on the last comment, which is the most promising one. If I heard you correctly, that in fact you are assessing the situation on the Zimbabwe border, and you're going to be making recommendations to the minister or to cabinet. And when can we expect to get some definite responses to what in fact is going to be done? Because, I mean, surely this is something we can't spend another year talking about here. We need to do something quickly. So when can we expect some sort of action to take place?
Thank you, Chair. Well, you see, Katie, we had that this persistent talk about the United States of Africa. So I suppose the borders will be falling. But you people are putting up borders. So I think let's not park that question.
Sure, thank you. I'm through for the
decisions. Okay, thanks. Yes, yes, comment. On the staff. All right. Just your question before we go to...
Chair, sorry, Nomvula. No, just regarding the vacancies, and I'll be the last person to say that we should privatize or whatever, but industries themselves, and there are big industries in the world and in this country, are using their own inspectors to either maintain quality of their products or counterfeit or whatever. Now, we are training inspectors, and Mr. Rademeyer has mentioned about the SACWA qualifications and things like that. Now, my worry is two things. If it wouldn't be possible, or if it hasn't been investigated maybe by the department, that one should maybe look at a PPP thing where one can actually not privatize it completely, but get, and the knowledge is available. I am told that the knowledge in South Africa is already being used by other African countries to assist them. So, and these are South African knowledge. To work together, to put some PPP or whatever together, that's the one thing. And the other question I have regarding this inspectorate is what retention strategy do you have? Because, you know, we train people and it's costing us a lot of money, and as soon as a person is trained and highly qualified, he gets pinched by a private industry. Do you have maybe a comment on that? Thank you, DG.
Thank you, on the PPP, yes, there's areas where one can exploit, and I would like to believe that we have already done that. There's some other instances in South Africa busy in this area, in this environment, and I can name some of them, that we have good working relationships with. Whatever they find, they will bring to us, and we will follow up on. And there's various of those that is currently busy in the same area of interest. So it's not just, there might be even one or two that one can define as CPPs, exactly that. Others we've got working relationships with to try and strengthen the system. So we are busy and we touch on your thing. On the issue of trained people leaving government, and I would perhaps give my personal opinion, that government must accept its responsibility to train people for the country. That's my experience for many, many years. So yes, it's uncomfortable, perhaps from time to time, but being involved then within agriculture in any case, I think it's also as such strengthening the system within South Africa. So the retention policies, as with many other things, the vacancies, we lock in government systems, of course, and we can't just go on our own and do whatever the department wants even to do. So as far as the government systems are allowing us, we are paying attention, and we have policies in place to address the retention of people and to look into that.
All right. Yes, Commissioner Sangwane.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to be as brief as possible, depending on the response that I get on the question. My first question is, what progress has been done to ensure that there are sufficient equipment, infrastructure, and facilities at the ports of entry?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this area, and I know that the report also specifically addressing this area, our response was, and I would emphasize that, is that exactly the reason why government had decided on this cooperative environment to establish that, the BCOCC, where five key departments at all ports of entry that's involved in that area must work together. Also, as far as especially infrastructure is concerned. For instance, if each and every department is buying its own, then there's no effectiveness into that. So you look at something like X-ray machines. SARS, I think, is currently running tenders in billions of rand in purchasing that, and that will be to the availability of all the departments there. Yes, those specifically needed by inspectors, one is attending to that, but one must keep this bigger picture into consideration, as I've just now indicated. Also, as far as buildings and those sort of things are concerned, we're making input in that developing committee of the BCOCC, and that R1 billion is definitely spent also to address the needs of agriculture.
So there is a coordinated way of ensuring that it's sufficiently done, and
there's a coordinated way in this BCOCC structure.
My next question is, what progress is in terms of coordination with participating inspectorates to ensure that shared equipment and tools are properly handled and maintained?
I'm not following.
The on page 14 of the report, the agency report. The question is related to the coordination and participation of inspectorates to ensure that said equipment and tools are properly handled and maintained.
As I've indicated also, Chair, perhaps we can get more information around that. But the BCOCC is a cabinet committee under the JCPS cluster, and it's got then sub-committees involving also provinces and all border posts. And in that area, these coordination is taking place, if I follow the question correctly.
Yeah, no, I think what she's saying is that in terms of the report, there is a concern around the issues that she has raised, irrespective of whether the BCOCC is there or not. But to say, you obviously have had the report, gone through it, looked at areas that need to be attended to. Is there anything that you have done specifically in regard to the issues that you have raised to try and address them? Because the question of the BCOCC subcommittees and what they're supposed to be done, it's more at a conceptual and generic level. I think her question is more at practical level, at the level of implementation.
Thanks, Chair. Cognitively, for those that are shared, there is an agreement in terms of the infrastructure committee, or the committee that my colleague referred to as the development committee, where the use of shared facilities are being debated and negotiated on. But from a departmental side, what we have done is that after the audit report, we went back and did an inventory list of what we are having, and made sure that items that belong to the or property of the department that is being used at border posts are in a working condition. Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much. Yes, Comrade.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My other question is related to the management information. I just want to find out, in regards to the measurement information, the AGIS report is indicating that monthly reports that are compiled are inaccurate, incomplete, invalid, inconsistent, or unreliable. Can you please be informed as to whether there's progress that has been made with regard to ensuring that reporting inspections performed are sufficient?
Thank you very much, yeah. Honourable Member.
No. I think, Kumbi, that question was partially dealt with when we're dealing with record keeping, where they indicated the introduction of a standardized system of reporting and stuff. I actually had wanted to ask it myself, but I think it was captured in that report. Unless you cannot satisfy, you want, I can allow him to respond. Maybe you have a follow up question. Okay. Yeah, sure. You can respond to that question.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Honourable Member. As already indicated, we have embarked on a harmonized system that deals with a spreadsheet that is being used at office level, escalated up to regional level and or port level, and also at the NBCC within the BCOCC. But over and above, because of the inconsistencies that were there, we have got a standard operating procedure that deals with record keeping that makes sure that we tie the loose ends that the Auditor General has found in terms of the reporting process. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think you had covered it when you indicated. The last question that I would put to the department is, has the necessary policies and procedures for record keeping been established? And is there any progress made in terms of the review of consistency of service delivery?
In terms of policies and procedures, yes, it has been done in terms of making sure that we have got the SOPs on the table. In terms of service delivery, one aspect that was an ISO that was dealt with was how do we take the individual contribution in terms of inspection up to directorate level in terms of performance. And what we have done is that we have tied it down in terms of the performance management system, the EPMS that we are doing, to say that a portfolio of evidence for each and every inspector in terms of their reviews, quarterly reviews, has got to be a must when it comes there, so that we can make a clear distinction in terms of what they are delivering as individuals at a particular office. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Comrade. Dr. Booth.
Thank you, Chair. I've just one follow-up question, Chairperson, that you sort of posed, and then it was just responded to in, vaguely, I would say. Chairperson, this report is 4 months old or five. It was drawn in March. And at the time of drawing this report, the auditor had this to say, most of monthly reports recompiled were inaccurate, incomplete, invalid, inconsistent, unreliable. This was said 4 months ago or five at most. And now, this presupposes that in the event of any outbreak of any disease, in terms of how you keep the record, it will not be possible to trace back any or to track back any type of disease that might have that might come out now. Are you saying with certainty now that in terms of your record, we can be able to trace back, you can be able to trace back the disease that might break in the event there is an outbreak? Because 4 months ago, this was the position. Now, with this position now, would it be possible? Are you telling this committee that that will be possible? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think a distinction has got to be drawn in terms of these diseases, because obviously there are different ways in which diseases can come into a country. And those that are introduced in terms of human and that were legally imported, for consignments that were legally imported, I can safely say that we can be able to do a traceback in terms of this. But there are also issues of illegal imports that we have got to look at, and also natural movement of diseases that the department also cannot account for in terms of this. But for those that are legally imported, I can safely say that the procedures and policies that we have set in place takes care of the concerns that were raised by the Auditor General. But over and above, once the system is there, it will also take care of the broader issues of saying that once it's in the system, it will be also easy to retrieve that kind of information.
All right. I think the focus of Red Bullet's question was more on the legally imported staff, because I think the AGF report refers to inadequacies in relation to the legally imported staff. But if you say that subsequent to the release of this report, these are measures that you have put in place, which of course in relation to your plan are going to send to us, we'll have a look at it. And when we meet again, subsequent to the September cycle, if we're not happy, we'll be able to take it up and say these are the areas of the... Yes, sir, comment, Vincent?
Thanks, Chair. I've got a question, and depending on the answer, possible follow-up. Because of the lack of equipment at your port of entry, a large amount of consignments were not inspected, and you then made an order that they must be inspected at a predetermined site at a later date. Can you give me two examples of what type of consignments we're talking about here that were not inspected at the port of entry because of lack of equipment and lack of infrastructure? Can I just have two examples of what type of consignments you're talking about, if any?
Thanks, Chair. I think it's not lack of equipment per se, but it might be lack of facilities to unpack some of the consignments that came through. And the answer that was given in terms of this was that we're working together with the BCOCC to make sure that the facilities are there. In terms of extended detentions, you might find that to facilitate...
Sorry, Chair. No. I'm asking what type of consignments there were. I hear your coordination. I just want to know, it's biltong, it's sheep. I just want to know what are these consignments that are not inspected at the port of entry.
Thanks, Chair. The consignments that are inspected, they depend on the mode of transport that they are using. It ranges. You would get extended detention for flowers. There would be extended detentions also for meat products or dairy products that come into the country for inspection in inland, depending on how are they packaged in transport. Because one of the WTO SPS measures is to say you facilitate trade in a less restrictive manner. So the extended detention, apart from also facilitating trade, it also helps that we don't have backlog at ports of entry, because if we inspected everything at ports of entry, it would also create bottlenecks at the port, so we do it inland.
All right, so we have meat, dairy products, flour.
The follow-up question to that one, Chair, is and I'm speaking from a layman's position, a consignment comes in, we can't inspect it, we give them an order to take it somewhere inland to be inspected. So the Auditor General is claiming that this process does not have reconciliation. In other words, you'll give me an order today that I must go, or I can move in with my consignment, it will be inspected somewhere else. However, you don't reconcile at this predetermined place if the 10 that you gave permission now were in fact inspected, or if they got lost in the process, or if they didn't ever get there. This is what the Auditor General is saying. My question to you is, how are you ensuring that that is done? I don't know if there's a process in place, because the process could be there but very faulty. What is it that you are doing as a department to ensure that if you give permission for 10 consignments to leave the border post for somewhere else to be inspected, that in fact they are inspected there? What reconciliations do we have in place? And can we have some sight of that type of thing? Because the process is one thing, but is that process effective? I'm hearing now my colleagues saying, is there a process in place? And you say to us, yes, there is. Ours is to inspect whether that process is effective. That's why I'm asking you the question. What is your reconciliation process that you use?
Thanks, Honourable Member. The reconciliation process that is in place now, subsequent to the AG's report, was to come up with an SOP that deals specifically with extended detentions. And dealing with extended detentions in this way, because obviously we're still dealing with some borders that are not really connected to the net, where the inspector was giving an extended detention, sends documents through to the receiving inspector inland, and the inspector who's inland are claiming that they have received that particular documentation, and verifying after inspection that that has been done with the inspector who's at the port. Thank you.
Was somebody listening? Does it sound effective? Any? No, just hang on. No, just hang on. I'm trying to check with Any. He has been listening very patiently. Does it sound effective?
It doesn't sound effective. My concern is that, you know, although there are very, I would say, some of the best experts, admittedly only towards the Air Force because they're not, they're surrounded by the sea. They're not like us that we've linked with so many states on our borders. But I'm just taking on a comparison with the Australian situation in South Africa. Now we're going to look at Cuba for solutions. And if there is a possibility that one could look at the integrated system of Australia, particularly where you have the scanners, and I hope that what has been said here today, you know, in terms of the sophistication, which and the billion of rounds that is being set aside for looking at this particular aspect, integrated with the other departments at port of entry, that we're looking at least at something of the controllable type of thing, where everything that's coming into this country is going through a scanner, not a single item, and that you not work on type of verification in terms of samples. If you could perhaps just give me an indication of that particular aspect for the future.
All right, they can go to Australia for the system. In Cuba, they are going for the personnel. So there's no, they are not mutually exclusive.
Won't our people go to Australia?
Yeah, respond to his question, and then I'll come to you. Eddie, are you okay?
No, sir. These guys have hijacked me.
All right.
Just quietly when they were speaking, but
No.
Fine. You can. I will come back.
No. Yeah. No. I listened to the response, and I thought maybe I'm confused. So I wanted somebody with a fresh mind like him who hasn't said anything all morning. Check it. If I'm still in order. Yeah, can respond to Honorable Baker's question, and then I'll give you Comrade Vincent, then Trent, and then Comrade Pierre, and that's it.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe just to clarify the issue on hand in terms of extended detention, which also leans quite a lot in terms of systems. I think the answer might not be sufficient in terms of honorable members, but what we are saying is that in the absence of that system that we are currently developing, we cannot just let things just unfold the way that they are unfolded in terms of inspections. And we have in that interim made sure that there is a reconciliation part in terms of a basis of the inspectorate having a clear indication amongst themselves to see whether those given extended detentions have been inspected by the inspectors inland who are supposed to do it. The issue on Australia in terms of the DG, and I think from a DNC point of view, they have acceded by saying that South Africans can come and attend a master class in terms of SPS issues, where we will be doing a lot of SPS issues. That will be next day in August. Over and above, we had an expert coming from Australia that was working on alien invasive species that we have tasked to say that look at our inspections and say what more can we improve, because he's an expert in terms of inspections. He was here in August, he has done it, we're expecting his report to come to the table. In terms of scanners, the B2CC had experts going to the U.S., we had people who accompanied them, and they looked at the scanners. And I think that from that perspective, looking at the shared facilities that have got to be used within the BCUCC, that we will be trying to get scanners and influencing the issue on getting scanners from that perspective. I think that is a good step.
All right, fine. Cool. Good. you're not only dealing with your communists, you're dealing with everybody. Okay?
Your communists.
No, thanks, Chair. Just on the response around the prolonged detention or whatever that word is. I don't think it's effective if the one inspector at the port of entry phones or writes to another inspector inland, and between themselves they decide, yeah, no, I've received it and it's okay. I think what the department needs to do, if you're not doing it, is to get an independent audit process done. Now, whether it's by the head of that department or by your internal audit or by somebody else, but you can't have two inspectors. The one saying I've sent it, the other one saying I've received it, and then the department says the process is effective. It has to be verified independently. Especially since you don't have a automated system currently, and I'm informed or I'm understanding that is still in the process of getting a automated system. So in the interim, whilst we have handwritten recall, I want to suggest to the department that somebody other than the inspector does an audit independently that says, in fact, it left point A, it got to point B, and that was that. Because then that system has some safeguard that some human error or maybe just human failing doesn't come into account. So that's what I'm talking about. And I suspect with all your manual systems, we need that type of process. And I don't get the sense that we're getting that type of independence. I'm not sure if you have an independent audit department, for instance, or an independent auditor that focuses on that directive. These are the things that we're talking about in terms of getting systems that the Auditor General would not write reports that says that he can't verify the fact that there's been reconciliation.
Yeah, I think what the auditors are saying actually is that there is no reconciliation procedure, or there are no reconciliation procedures. So if there's been a response to that finding, it means there should be specific reconciliation procedures that are in place in relation to extended detention cases. But I think it's for you to respond whether they are there now or not. If they are there, what are these reconciliation procedures that have been put in place?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the members' question, indeed we do have that Mr. Reddy there, who is our internal audit officer. He covers these areas, and I've been having a series of meetings with him around OR Tambo, where he confirms and reports to me what needs to be done on a very regular basis. That would be addressing the specific question. Thank you, Chair.
But is he sufficiently staffed? I mean, you are talking. My sense is that he's doing the audit within the department as a whole, isn't it? Or is it specifically to the import inspection service?
He also covers the import areas.
In addition to the entire department?
Yes, sir.
Our capacity is to effectively and efficiently do that work. And I mean, since when have you been an employee? If up to the production of this report, there are no reconciliation procedures.
He's been with us since 2005. We've just also agreed with him that he has got to build up and beef up his system to, amongst others, cover the areas that are alluded in the report over and above those that he does within the department.
So currently he doesn't have the systems in place. He still has to develop them. And I'm following up on what you just said. Am I capturing you correctly?
The systems he has, but what he was
indicating to me was losing a lot of people and also needing to beef up, and we have agreed on both retention, recruitment, as well as beefing up his system, not only to cover the department internally, but also the inspectorate. We have added another function where he needs to be covering the provinces as well as the risk management in general that he has indicated to the department needs to be covered. And for that, I've said he should speedily beef up the system.
Effectually, work in progress.
In addition to what he's already been doing and covering what things.
But of course, whatever he's been doing has not been sufficiently covering on the inspection services on the very issue that we're talking about.
Chair, many of some of the issues that have not come to the attention of the auditor general are indeed amongst others because he has brought to my attention and we've followed up on those matters and said they should be dealt with.
Okay, no fine. Yes, Honorable Chair?
In the interesting discussions in policy, I just wanted to say that unless you have a properly functional risk management system in place, you're just inviting corruption. And I think that's concerned that constantly work with projects. You've got to do something. I just wanted to ask you in respect of what Vincent was dealing with. What is the difference between extended detention or being considered with a temporary release, or is it the same thing? Because apparently what happens to some folks is that they can't deal with all these issues, so they give them a temporary release or temporary prison. Now what happens after that? Is the same as what Vincent is talking about, or is it something different?
Well, thanks, Chair. I think it's the same thing, although the way temporary release would mean that the consignment was released, but detention says that it's still under the control of the department until such time that a release is being given at that point.
Okay, now, so therefore, how do you monitor the temporary releases? Because you're letting that consignment go now. There must be some conditions attached to that temporary release permit, and then those conditions must be met, surely. And do you have a way of following up on that? I think it's more than just a time.
I think over and above, Honourable Member, what has been alluded here, the way that they are dealt with is that they are dealt with in terms of a provision within the Act. And what happens is that a person who's accorded that signs to say that they agree and they give the place where the consignment will be together with the contact numbers of the people who will be doing that particular extended detention. And then, as already said, that then the internal kind of arrangements within the DOA would be the where the extended detention is being given is accorded to the next port.
No, detention. You see, the moment you talk of extended detention and temporary release, you use them interchangeably. Then you confuse my friend there. The issue that we're talking about here, now I can see maybe we're talking about two different things. It is this lack of reconciliation procedure is on the temporary release goods, which I think is what you're explaining, that you give this guy a form, you can take your goods, but they will meet in Beaufort West. You go there, it will be inspected there. That's where the report says there are no reconciliation procedures. So, extended detention, then that becomes something else that we're not talking about, but it's in relation to these temporary releases. So if you say there are now reconciliation procedures, they must be in relation to these temporary releases.
I think Honourable Member over there has just given us an idea in terms of how would we deal with those releases, specifically in terms of audits where we include an extra person from like the internal audit to do it, and I would say that we need to have an internal kind of a debate on releases like that where we bring in an independent body to look whether it's done correctly.
So indeed, the gentleman to your extreme left is not doing the work related to temporary release reconciliation processes.
Chair, I think the performance, there is a regulatory audit that is being done on inspections, and it's been done on religiously, let me put it in that way. Where the issues come in are the issues of performance auditing within our own component, and that is one area that we need to beef up on.
Yeah, no, you see, the report says that the procedure is not there, or if it is there, it's hardly existent, and it is an area that needs to be attended to. And I hear you very, very well in your response to what Comrade Vincent was suggesting, which means it's the new idea that you'll actually be going to work on. Otherwise, as of now, there is no viable idea that you know, that is on the table in terms of addressing this shortfall. So we certainly would want you gentlemen to speed up that part. Because it may as well be that a consignment is released here in the Cape Harbour, we'll inspect it in Somerset West, and it goes right up to George and then gets into the market. So, I want us to wrap it up. So I'll be the last option and then come to COVID Pete.
What concerns me is a high percentage of these consignments were not inspected. A high percentage. Therefore, it appears to me that you're getting a lot of these temporary release forms. A lot of it. And you know, if you tell the person that consignment must go to, as you've used the example, said Somerset at West within 48 hours, you've got 48 hours to empty those containers and put something inside that is legitimate. And to me, you know, this is really very, very unsatisfactory. You can't allow a person time to go and offload these containers and put, you know, he's got a lot of contraband stuff in the container or something, you know, that he needs, and then he just swaps the containers and he goes to the place and he says, yes, that's it. I find that very difficult to accept that makes for an efficient control of the stuff coming into the country.
All right. I take that to be more of a comment than a question, and which I don't think needs to be contested. Yes, Committee.
Thank you, sir. I'll be short, Chair. Maybe just short answers. The director mentioned, for instance, the in terms of equipment and infrastructure, and the report highlighted Cape Town and PE Harbour, saying that there were, for instance, no forklifts or drivers or this or that, and then, for instance, Johannesburg or Tambo Airport, there were no X-ray machines. And then you said that you did go and have inspections and see what was needed, but you only mentioned, for instance, the some of the ports. I would just like to get assurance from you that you went to all the border posts and got a shopping list of what you need and also a stock list of what you've got. And then the other question, Chair, in terms of the record keeping, the report of the Auditor General highlighted some seriously problems in terms of inspecting documentation which was requested. For instance, in December 2005, they requested from PE Harbour 75 documents. They only received 9. In February, they requested 124. They only received 15. So, and then they went to Bytebridge. They requested 46, only received 25. 6 months later, 3 months later, they requested 51, only got 12. It went down. It actually deteriorated. So one would like to get some clarity on that, if that system is being addressed. And then my last question, Chair, and you know, it's politically very sexy to zoom in on border posts, especially the Zimbabwe one. But I also have a problem, and this is not really covered in this report of the Auditor General, but with your domestic inspection services, and I think it relates to your border things as well, because they speak to each other. I recently accompanied a owner of a game farm in La Palala, other side of in the bush shop, and he had to take a trophy, a warthog flock pack was shot on his farm and he had this thing stuffed up for the hunter in Johannesburg. But the reason to move this trophy from the farm, the hunting farm in the bushveld to Johannesburg, he had to go to La Pilale, to the state vet himself as the owner of the game farm to get a permit and then move it, give it to the guy who hunted. Now, on page 15 of this report, there is mention made here of the lack of communication between the state veterinarian and the inspector. And I think it hasn't been covered so far today in this hearing, and I would like to get some clarity on if the situation is going to improve, because it's quite serious. Chair, that is basically all my questions. Oh, and the last thing, Chair, is...
No, hang on. My problem, you have four questions, and at the end, only one and a half are answered. I would have loved you ask one question, they respond to it, so that you don't lose focus on the issue. Okay, but anyway, just ask your last question.
No, the last question is a simple one. You know, we speak about confiscating and so on. What actually happens to the stuff that does get confiscated? Does it get destroyed? And are there a paper trail for this, seeing what happens to it, and see that it doesn't end up somewhere else? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond to all three questions. The first question dealt with the inventory that was taken, whether the other ports were taken into consideration. Yes, all ports that have got agricultural quarantine technicians were taken into consideration, taking PE and Cape Town also. And the number of documents that were requested that got lesser and lesser. I think that the Auditor General, being here also in the audience, will allude that the issues around the tracing also have to do with the linkage between the Department of Agriculture and SARS, where currently what we are doing is that we make sure that we also have got SARS documentation as part and parcel of our documents, so that there is easy way of tracing it back, because part of our challenges during the audit was, one, the Auditor General had requested through SARS to get few documents, and those documents couldn't be tied up with what was in agriculture. And where we did not think that it was fair for us to give them those documents, and we could not link them quite clearly to SARS, then we said that the documents were not there and they can allude to them. Now, currently what's happening is that...
Are you saying that you said the documents were not there when actually they were there? Or what exactly is your point?
The point is where documents could not be tied back, because we had to be certain that that particular consignment is linked to a bill of entry that was issued by SARS, where that kind of conviction could not be made, then it was mutually agreed that it is not going to be taken into consideration.
Struggling to understand that, but anyway, respond to the other two questions. The agent's office is here, maybe throw more light into it.
Okay. And the issue on the consignments that are confiscated, there is a procedure, there is a standard procedure. You get a destruction certificate if your consignment is taken and they are destroyed under supervision by people who are authorized to supervise, and you get a destruction certificate to indicate that it has been destructed from a department site. It's also audited by Mr. Reddy.
Communication between the inspectors and the state vet?
Communication between the department and the state vet has been improved from a perspective that each and every consignment that is given an extended detention, we communicate with the state vet to make sure that they are aware of consignments that are coming their way, and we also conscientize them of the aspects of risk that are associated with the consignment.
All right. I just would like to throw some light on the documentation, submission of documents, and thank you, sir. What in fact happened was we used a database of customs to identify goods that were imported through certain ports of entry, and we requested the department to give us the inspection certificates for VAT confinements that were imported. Now, they couldn't link that documentation to their own documentation in all instances. Therefore, they couldn't locate their own documentation to prove the inspection. And then it's reported as it is not available, cannot be submitted.
So I think that the problem was that the department did not have all the documents that it needed.
They could not link it to the customs references, so it can either be that it's not there, or that they cannot locate it, but they couldn't submit it for auditing purposes.
Alright, hopefully I'll understand it as the day goes on. I'm really struggling to. Right, Commissioner, do you have anything to say before we call it quick for the day?
No, thank you, President. On the Portfolio Commission Agriculture and Land Affairs, I think this was a fruitful exercise since we are also going to deal with this afternoon and on Monday or on Tuesday in the Portfolio Committee level. But the questions that have been posed here, I think Honorable Lali has sharpened us, and as we as the Portfolio Committee, it's the first time to attend such meeting, we extend our sincere thanks being invited to this committee, although we haven't received any documentation, so that we could fully participate in this discussion. Thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you, comrades. I think Eddie always has an extra copy. We should have.
And also, Chair, we haven't been informed about changing of the venue. We're still waiting at V227.
Oh, somebody is going to lose his job today. We want to call it quick. Is there something you want to comment on, comrades? I'll be very generous, this being our first hearing in this court.
Yeah, thanks, and there's not much, but except to say that there was a request of a plan which was indicated by the department that is going to be sent to yourself. We'd really appreciate if that document when sent to yourself, it can be copied to the Committee for Aggression and Affairs, so that because they are appearing on before ourselves on a quarterly basis, that we can also keep track in terms of the process that has been agreed here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think from our side, all the documents that will come from the department arising from today's discussion will make them available to the Portfolio Committee. Mr. DG, thank you very much. Together with the delegation for having come, like I indicated at the beginning, we had issues that needed to discuss and get clarity from ourselves, and we are satisfied that we've got responses. Some were very happy about, some I'm still a bit confused, and some were certainly cleared by the documentation that you're going through sent to us. We do understand that actually the inspection service, import inspection services, is manned by a very dedicated staff. It certainly does need support from management in terms of making sure there's the equipment. You do have sufficient personnel so that people are not stretched to the limit. You have a lot of temporary release, which actually means permanent relief, you know, and systems and processes, procedures are put in place to ensure that things are done well. Well, I think personally I'm also happy that since the report came out, there are a number of things that you have followed up, you have taken up as a department to try and address those gaps. I think from our side, that is what we want. When we come to discuss the report, we don't want to hear
write this we're going to do, this we're going to do. We want more of, since the report came out, this is what we've done. That is good. But it's also bad. Because it means unless the AG came, there was, you saw nothing wrong with the situation. It was only when the report came out that you became alive to the deficiencies that are there. So we want that the people who are employed to, on a day-to-day basis, look after the welfare of the department or its entities, rise up to the challenge of their responsibilities by always looking at shortcomings, looking at areas of improvement, the necessary risks that are involved, and be able to proactively deal with the situation. We want to thank you very much, and we hope that if the import inspection services are a patient, wish it health, together with all your other patients, wish them health, so that everything is fine. Thank you very much. The meeting is over. For members of the committee, I just want to take this opportunity to announce that we're supposed to have Teta and the liquidator today, but it's not possible. What we are trying to do is see if we can have them on Tuesday, seeing that the only thing we had to do on Tuesday was allocation of focus areas for what we did yesterday. So if we are able to get them, I think by today, tomorrow, we should be able to confirm to yourself whether Teta and the liquidators will make it on Tuesday. Thank you very much. We're done for the day. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Whilst everybody's three committee members, let's stay put. Maybe we can grab tea so long. Just grab a cup of tea and then let's come back and...